Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. A phenomenal celebration of 5 years of ministry as The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The energy in the sanctuary filled the room, and we cannot even begin to capture a part of how we felt and how God's presence was moving this morning as we gathered to celebrate 5 years. And in all that we have learned in these 5 years, we still have our technological struggles. So instead of you experiencing now the fullness and the energy that we all celebrated with together this morning, we come to you in the middle of the afternoon in the emptiness of a sanctuary to celebrate and to share with you some semblance of the message that we offered this morning as The Table turns five.
Our scripture passage this morning is from the New Testament, Book of Mark. I'm going to read from the 9th chapter, verses 30 to 37. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him, and 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me."
I'm going to begin this morning with a story that I've shared a number of times. Each time that we've gathered for Blueprint for Discipleship, and most every time that we've gathered down at Old Soul for Coffee with Pastors. In looking back on our last 5 years of worship here as The Table at Central United Methodist Church, this story just kept coming up for me. Sarah started her residency in family and community medicine at UC Davis back in 2004. Just a few weeks after we moved to Sacramento, she was working countless hours, and I had a few months before the fall semester of seminary started. Our apartment was at 13th and G Streets in downtown. And she was up early as she always was, taking off for work to be on labor and delivery. It was one of our first Sunday mornings, and she was off to the hospital, and I decided that I would walk to find worship. I passed a locked down United Methodist Church at 21st and J Street, and somehow I continued up J and missed the one at 36th and J and found myself right here. 11 years ago last month, Linda actually found the guest book where I was a dutiful young person and signed the book and even gave my address. I don't remember much from that morning. The sanctuary had a handful of people. Mostly, though, what I remember is moving outside of the sanctuary right after worship and being surrounded by a few folks. And they were eager to tell me, "We have another young adult. If you'll come back next Sunday, she will probably be here."
When I arrived, it wasn't that the hearts of everyone here weren't warmed for welcoming. They were. It's just that, as strange as this may sound, in such a beautiful sanctuary, it was all but empty. There was very little room. This was a very close-knit community, and if you know anything about knitting, you know that being tight-knit means there is only a little room between the stitches. This makes for a very sturdy garment, which protects you and keeps you warm, because very little can get in. And that's a lot of what it was like here. So, not just me, but others share about this, and we were able to videotape Mary, who is one of our historic members. Let's listen and watch as Mary shares about her experience.
So I came back to the church. We had shrunk then, and we were down to, at that time, about 40 people. Not very many families. We had one child that had an impromptu Sunday school for. And we continued to kind of wither a little bit. And when Pastor Jay left, we had Audrey Ward come in as an interim pastor to see, could we make a go of it? We'd all been wearing a lot of hats. I sang in the choir, read scripture in church. There was times that we led worship when we didn't have a pastor, when we had a guest pastor. Fellowship hour, two committees. We all got kind of tired. And then Linda came, and I was on staff parish relations at that point. And Linda came in, and we talked, and, okay, this sounds good, but sales, we did everything we could. We were a very close church family. It was, you knew everybody. They knew you. You could feel free to just talk about anything to anyone. You know, it was very nice. It was a very special time, and even though we were very small, our worship was beautiful.
They were very small, so I was able to take my time and meet with each and every person here, to listen to the desire of their hearts. Jim Waters, Mary Marr, Kathy Welch, all of them said, "We want to grow and welcome others." And it was Kathy Welch who said, in response to my question of, like, how do you see that you might welcome new folks into this church, who said, "I don't know, but I do know that God has something special in store for our little church." A few weeks ago, Matt sat down to talk with more of our folks, and Jim Waters was one of those. I think Jim's reflection can help all of us to have compassion for those faithful folks, 20 or so, who 5 years ago were gathering here in this huge room. He said, "Even if we had a plan for welcoming, I don't think we would have known it would work if it was right before us." You see, there are many times when God's people, having the best of intentions, lose their focus on welcoming others and instead end up caring only for themselves. The passage from Mark's gospel this morning is a reminder of this. As Jesus and his disciples were traveling through one town after another, his disciples debated who among them would be the greatest and have the most important position when Jesus came into his kingdom. And Jesus sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "Look, whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." And then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me."
And this might not sound shocking today. If you're like me, it's easy to have a romantic image of children. I woke up this very morning just before 6 o'clock, and before I headed out the door on my way here to the sanctuary, I stopped and paused and went into Eleanor's room. I took out my phone and turned on the light so I could see the image of just her beautiful innocence asleep, curled up with all of her stuffed animals. That's the image that I so easily fall into. That's the child that I imagine. And so when Jesus says, "Welcome one such child as this," I think, beautiful. But that's not the image that the Gospel of Mark has at all. The Gospel of Mark has something entirely different in mind when it imagines children. In every case that we see children occurring in the entire Gospel of Mark, it's always around sickness or oppression. You have in chapter 5 the synagogue ruler's daughter, and then in chapter 7 the Syrophoenician's daughter, and then by chapter 9 a deaf and dumb son. Every single moment we're reminded by biblical scholar Ched Myers and others that children in Mark's narrative worldview are almost always victims, very different than the beautiful, innocent images that we hold today. Ched Myers writes, "Our ability to protect our children in certain ways today can create an illusion that forgets the vulnerability that is on the other side of children's dependency on the adult world in the past as well as in other parts of our world today. Whoever wants to be first shall be last of all and servant of all." In this moment, Jesus incarnates or embodies this message by placing a child in their midst and then embracing that child. Jesus introduces the child as the least one in a family structure. In a society that needs one to be received, the child is at the bottom of the household structure. In this patriarchal worldview, we had the husband or father on the top of this chain, and then the wife, and then servants, and then finally at the very bottom, children. So it's as Jesus bringing this child, this one who is on the bottom of the social hierarchy, into the very middle of the disciples, saying that to embrace a child like this is to embrace God, turns their world upside down. And in this very moment, we're reminded that Jesus takes greatness and ties it together with welcoming the one who is last, the one who is on the bottom. Jesus ties these together in ways that never allow us as followers of his way to pull them apart again. See, if we want to be great, we must celebrate and welcome others, most especially those who will benefit us the least, by making space in this very place for those others to be children of God.
The people called Methodists grew out of the faith practice of John Wesley. And John Wesley always did his best to welcome many to church in a new way for his age. And as Karen Oliveto shared last week in her history of Lizzie Glide, we also hail from a long line of loose women who are audacious in following Jesus, and it's those loose women's legacy of love and justice that is responsible for leaving us this beautiful place in which we worship today. But as you can imagine, a community that began as long ago as ours, back in 1850, and grew to capacity and moved and evolved until it made its home here, had collected a lot of stuff. And over the years, this place had become cluttered with the remnants of those who had been welcomed but were no longer among us. So we've been slowly, over these 5 years, about the process of renovation, gathering a small band of folks together, letting go of old things, trying on new things, uncovering the beautiful bones of this gift of a building, and doing our best to receive the generous, audacious gift of Lizzie and so many others that came before us and to care for it as we welcome future generations. And still, with all of this work over 5 years, we don't always know what we are doing. We were a small group of families and individuals who were trying to learn how to watch over each other in love. This is a picture of those of us who went beyond our walls to protest on behalf of teachers in our community 5 years ago. That was a good thing, but we've also made some epic mistakes, like our first gathering in the social hall in which we invited all of you to this simple meal of your favorite locally grown food. And we set a beautiful table and we lit all kinds of candles and we opened the doors to let the breezes flow through, and you all came, 11 of you and 7 children under the age of 5 plus my 3, running around like Tasmanian devils. That was a huge miss. But it is not a miss that we have literally focused on welcoming children from the very beginning in any way we can, but specifically by creating not one, but 2 godly play sanctuaries. Our godly play sanctuaries were the first rooms that we renovated. And like those before us, we put our own sweat and tears into this place with the support of our elders who were among us, but now no longer able to do the work or climb safely up the ladders that they had once done. And when we finished that, Eleanor and little Anthony, Sophia and Isaac, Marcus and Ryan and Callie then had a place to learn the grammar of grace, to learn the stories of our faith. Then we planted a flag out front in the yard to say welcome without any idea about what that might mean and about who God would actually call into this space. Look around. You are the ones that God has called into this space. Janet Hunt writes this about welcoming in this passage. She says, I wonder now how it is that we as communities find ourselves able to heed this invitation from Jesus today to welcome. I wonder where we get the clarity, the strength, the courage, the confidence to be and do what is right in this way. It must be more than simply knowing that new people are necessary in order to keep any institution, whether it be your exercise class or the corner store or a congregation, going strong. In fact, if that's our only motivator, it never really works, at least not in churches. Rather, it must somehow come from a deeper love for the last and the least and the lost, that we would be willing to give up our space and welcome, focusing always on what matters most of all, being on fire for Christ. We know that when each of you came into this room, someone welcomed you eventually or right away. I don't know what it was like for you, but I want you to try to remember your first time here. Unless, of course, you're Rachel, because you will remember, if you're Rachel, that I actually accosted you instead of welcoming you in the aisle and welcomed your purse before I welcomed you. I'm kind of bad at doing those things. But seriously, remember who welcomed you into this space, who you have invited yourself, or who you have met in the pew next to you or out in coffee hour.
We are so not perfect at this. We planted that flag outside because God's unconditional love says that all means all. We fall short of that. We have in the past, and we will inevitably continue to do so. But we continue to place our hope in a God who places no boundaries around love. And we struggle to try to figure out what that looks like in our own lives to welcome those children. Just this week, we've been struggling with how to best care for the children as parents are gathering together to watch over one another in love through kitchen tables. When we first started 5 years ago, we had little Anthony and Eleanor, and we could turn to one or two of our teenagers and say, "Can you watch over these 2 beautiful children for just an hour while we gather to share how it is with our souls?" Linda and I have been counting, though, and as of the moment before the second worship service, we were convinced that there were 8 women in our community of faith who are expecting a baby. And then the 11 o'clock service started, and we learned that it was 9 women that are in our community expecting a baby. We can no longer turn simply to one of our teenagers and say, "Can you watch over these children in love?" because one can't do it. One of those teenagers who's now a college student, she was here last week in this very space trying to do it. She had a 1-year-old on one hip and a 2-year-old on another hip, and she had children running around. She lost count at how many children were in their room, somewhere around 6 or 7 or 8. We want to figure out how to watch over these children in love, but the truth is our capacity, our infrastructure for doing so, it is lagging behind our hopes and our best intentions. We're a community that was blessed when we first started 5 years ago to have Peggy, who'd been watching over children in love in this community for many, many decades. And we added by going together to a graduate of Tubman House, Lourdes, and inviting her to join our team and to start a second nursery so that we could have space for all of the children that were in our space. But Sunday mornings, where we put our priority, has meant that we haven't necessarily been able to develop the structures we need to gather together and kitchen tables and make sure that children are cared for as our adults watch over one another in love. And it's good news and bad news. Jesus didn't go to a couple people and say, "Here's the deal. I want you to write personnel policies to make sure that everything is in place for the children to be safe. And then I want the 3 of you to gather together, to pull folks together, to train them up in how to watch over the children in love. And then I want the 8 of you to work full-time and you 3 to work part-time to do this." Jesus didn't do any of those bureaucratic things. He simply took the child that was passing by, placed him in his lap, embraced the child, looked at his disciples, and said, "Now go and do this. Go do this." But we know how hard it can be. It can actually be overwhelming. It was this week for some folks who needed to embrace a child. It happened this week in Texas. They say that everything is bigger in Texas, and it definitely should have felt that way for that young Muslim boy who created a clock and dared to share his tinkering with his teacher. And I don't often stand in this sanctuary and say that I am certain what Jesus would do, but I'm very clear this morning. I'm confident that Jesus would be standing this week saying, "I stand with Ahmed." And it isn't just Ahmed. Since our community of faith started to form 5 years ago, more than 200,000 Syrians have died in a civil war. Close to 12 million people, one half of the Syrian population, has been forced to leave their homes. What began as an act of civil protest, teenagers writing revolutionary slogans on a school wall, has continued to expand to civil war, to mass exodus, to genocide. The United Nations High Commission on Refugees puts it bluntly: globally, one in every 122 human beings is now either a refugee, displaced internally within their own country, or seeking asylum. Across the world, there are an estimated 60 million people who are displaced from their homes because of war and persecution and environmental degradation. We live in a time in history with the highest ever displacement on record. We look to Texas. We look around the world, the seemingly countless children in the world that desperately need real and significant welcoming, it can feel utterly overwhelming.
And we hear Jesus say, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." If we want to welcome Ahmed or Syrian refugees, we actually start by welcoming the other right around us. We might feel like Texas is south of us, miles and miles away, a whole different culture for so many of us. The truth is, we all have a little bit of Texas in us, my Berkeley High School self included. Look, Jesus is not saying love everyone all at once. Jesus takes one child into his lap. In order to love Ahmed and Syrian refugees, we must learn to love the little ones right in front of us and allow them to challenge us to love everyone around us. This is beautiful, and they make it look so easy. But we always need to remember, is what Matt said earlier, those little ones in biblical times that the Gospel of Mark is writing about represented the ones on the bottom, the ones who had been left behind, the ones who seemed insignificant, the ones who were burned.
We want to share a couple of stories about what this looks like to embody the welcome that Jesus calls us to. These are stories from right here in our own midst. Jimmy wanted to be welcomed by the church of his family. Instead of seeing Jimmy as a beloved child of God, the small Jehovah's Witness community around him shunned him for who he was. Jimmy was burned in ways that I cannot even possibly fathom, and so it was astonishing to me to see him walk through the doors of this sanctuary just over a year ago. The truth is, I don't think Jimmy was quite ready to give church another chance, but he loved his friend who invited him to come and check out this little place called The Table, and so he did, just hoping that that relationship might continue. I remember him coming in this space mostly because he came in a suit and tie on his very first day. And unless you're Pastor Carl, no one else comes into this sanctuary in a suit and tie, but Jimmy did on that very first day. And a few weeks ago, he celebrated 1 year of life here with all of us together at the table. Jimmy has gone from being shunned by folks in the name of God to welcoming children at the table. Throughout the summer heat, Jimmy was going outside of the sanctuary to watch over, to welcome children, my own daughter included, to invite them into his own lap, to hug on them, to love them, to remind them and to embody an embrace of God's love and care, one that Jimmy didn't experience for parts of his own life, but now has come to a place of welcoming children in our very midst.
Another person we want to share about is Tim. Tim wasn't in a tie the first time he came, but I do think he was wearing his fabulous Nero suit. Tim was raised in a church family. His dad started a Baptist church, actually, out of their home in the South. Tim was part of all of that. As Tim grew older, he began to understand himself better, and Tim gradually understood that he was gay. And Tim believed that this would not be acceptable to God or to his church or to his family. But Tim had always loved working with the church and spending time and working with all the children in their church. But upon this self-understanding, he voluntarily chose to stop his work and to step away from the children because of his own certainty that God would not be okay with him working with children. He kept this to himself and instead decided that his place was to work behind the scenes, to clean only the bathrooms, scrub the floors, and to stay far, far away from children. When Tim came out, as he did so as an adult, no longer part of his father's church, word got back to his father's church, and that church actually asked Tim's dad to step down as their leader. Eventually, over time, Tim and his family have been able to celebrate together who and how he loves, and Tim met Larry, and they welcomed into their home two sons by adoption, Wolfie and Hunter. I wasn't the first to welcome Tim Lee to the table. According to him, Isaac, my son, was when he followed him, chased him basically out of the sanctuary down the portico walkway saying, yelling, "Hey, are you coming back? And are you going to bring your dog?" Tim's story came full circle with all of us this summer when on the very last Sunday of our summer children's ministry, for the very first time since he was a young person, Tim volunteered to watch over all of our children in love. Actually, Tim Lee is the one who watches over all of us with Melissa in love as one of the leaders of our kitchen table leaders. This means that Tim attends every blueprint group, listens to us, hears our stories and our openings, and connects us one to another in our kitchen table so that we can all root our lives in grace and grow in faith. Tim chose to give God and the church another chance to welcome him.
We've been at this for 5 years. 5 years trying to practice the art of welcoming one another, trying to practice being welcomed ourselves. Jesus reminds us this morning that it is a child who is placed at the center and then calls us to welcome that child, the one seen in the household as the least and at the bottom. Jesus turns that upside down and calls us to do the same. We have come so far by faith, and God continues to lure us and call us into being an ever more welcoming community, making space in this very place for people who right now feel like God has left them behind. One of the ways, as folks in their kitchen tables have been listening for how God is calling them to be in the world, that's emerged this week has happened as Jamie Garrett, who's a Godly Place storyteller and is part of a kitchen table, started to share about her own family's experience in the aftermath of the fires that have been burning all around Northern California. This is a personal issue for Jamie. Her uncle lost his home earlier this week, and her family comes from this area. Just a few days ago, Jamie was taking things up to help folks out who have lost their entire homes. She took clothing and food and toiletries. And so her kitchen table has said that this is an issue that is way bigger than Jamie, and they all want to work together to reach and love in this way. And so in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start to place places in the back of the sanctuary for you to bring items. I want you to check social media to see what is needed, and Jamie and folks from her kitchen table are going to go together to take things to families and to individuals who have been devastated by the fires around us. We also want to acknowledge that our wider church, our church in this area, is responding to this issue and inviting us to do the very same thing. If you'll write fire or fire response on a check or an envelope, if you'll go into our online giving and give, making a note of fire or fire response, we will make sure that all of the dollars that we collect in this offering will go directly to help families and individuals who are in need. It's the radical generosity of folks who went before us that allows us to gather in the beauty of this space. It's the phenomenal generosity of folks in this very room over the last few years that has helped us to live into God's dream for this little community. And Daryl Black is going to share with us an original song called Thank You, inviting us to root our lives in gratitude, recognizing the abundance of gifts that God has bestowed upon us, and then out of that place calls us to be a welcoming people. So let us give generously as Daryl shares his own version of thank you.